Apple Card is the perfect cashback rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase, every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/cardcalculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch, subject to credit approval, terms apply.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
All right, everybody. It is 9:58 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. UFC Vegas 28 has come to an end, and it ended with a ferocious knockout by Jairzinho Rozenstruik, which is 1 second left in round one against Augusto Sakai. He is back on track, and we're here to react to this barn burner of an event. Is that what we're going with here on this barn burner of a post-fight show here on MMAfighting.com? We are live on YouTube, Twitter, and Facebook. Thank you for joining us. Hope you guys had a great evening thus far, and hope we can make it continue on in this realm. I am Mike Heck, joined by the whole crew. Got Jose Youngs in Arizona.
This fight doing barn the damn was thing. A table.
We got Alex Kaylee. How would you describe this fight card, AK?
It was 14 fights long. It had two heavyweight fights at the end of it. That's my description. That is my very accurate description of this card. You cannot dispute it.
And how would you describe it, E. Casey Lydon on the ones and twos?
Intriguing. Intriguing.
Oh.
Well, there you have it. Intriguing it was for a little while. There were some moments where it was intriguing. There were some moments where it was not so intriguing. But the night ended in a big way. And the first round, the first like 4 minutes and 45 seconds of Jairzinho Rozenstruik versus Augusto Sakai was pretty much what we expected. And then Jairzinho just got mad and landed that 1-2, the left hook, right hand. That was it. Sakai went down. He was bleeding. And that was it. Jairzinho Rozenstruik gets it done. He's back on track.
Hey, shout out to the small cage, yeah. Though. Sakai backed up and he ran into a wall. So, yeah, small cage. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Small Cage.
Mr. Small Cage. Science. Science. Jose, your thoughts on Biggie Boy's bounce back rebound performance?
Well, if we're talking about science, it's obviously the crystal brought him to victory. No, but actually, I was serious right there. So what am I even talking about? Anyway, it lasted quicker than I thought. I think I picked a third round knockout, TKO, whatever, or some sort of stoppage just based on Augusto Sakai's last fight against Overeem, where he looked really good for about 2-3 minutes, and then Overeem's just veteranship just kind of took over and he pieced him up and route to I can't even remember what round he finished, but it wasn't in the first round, obviously, to my recollection. And then we've seen Jairzinho have slow starts against Overeem. We saw him have a very slow fight against Cyril Gane, but then we've also seen him have these just like sprint performances like he did against Arlovsky, JDS, who's the individually knocked out in about 9 seconds. I can't even, Alan Crowder, if I remember correctly. So I didn't know what to expect. I was based on Augusto Sakai's previous performances and Jairzinho's most recent performance against Cyril Gane. I thought it was going to be, you know, Augusto kind of blows his gas tank early and then Rozenstruik kind of takes advantage and finishes in the third. But another, I don't know, atom bomb with 1 second to go. I think that's kind of a specialty right now. I'm going to save some because I did Twitter reacts for the site, and I think there's a fun matchup that doesn't make sense ranking-wise, but there's a certain heavyweight that had some negative things to say about Jairzinho Rozenstruik's performance. So, yeah, I'll save that for fantasy matchmaking. But, yeah, awesome win for Jairzinho, and sucks to be Augusto Sakai getting knocked dead in another country. Now you have to fly all the way back home and you're probably falling outside the top 10.
I'm going to maintain a semblance of professionalism here after watching the New York Islanders score their third goal. So the Bruins are out of this game tonight. It is now 2-2 going into game five. I'm going to forget about all that.
I blame Brian Keller.
Yeah, I was going to like text him and talk a bunch of crap tonight, but I decided now I'm not going to do that because it's 2-2. Fun series, by the way, if you're a hockey fan. But AK, your thoughts. What did you think of Jarzynski's performance tonight?
It's exactly what we expected. We know he's a patient guy, counter fighter. You know, the reason he lost the Cyril Gane fight is, a bunch of reasons. There's a bit of an athleticism gap. Cyril Gane is also a really technical fighter. And that fight also kind of went as we expected. We were all kind of like, it's a good matchup, but it could be, a bit of a staring contest, a bit of a spar. And that's how that turned out. This would have gone a similar way if not for that late knockout, because Sakai was doing the right smart thing. I'm circling. I'm poking away with leg kicks, and hopefully I can get him to come in and I'll counter. And Rosenstrike is similar in that sense as well. He's like, well, I'm waiting for an opening to counter. And he's just found his opening first. He found his opening first. That's his gift. He has that ability. As we said earlier, he can both finish like in the first like 10 seconds, but also he can wait for that right moment as he did in this one. And as he kind of did in the Overeem fight. I know that wasn't his best, certainly was not his best day. But obviously he did enough to officially get the win and really mess up Overeem's face in the last few seconds. So yeah, he is who we think he is. Should this change anyone's perception of him as far as like, oh, well, now I really believe he can be, he can be a real title contender. I don't know. It was a good performance. But as we were kind of, previewing the show, we're like, we don't know if this fight gets anyone on this card closer to like to a title shot in their division. That's probably true of Rosenstrike as well.
Casey, I feel like with Rosenstrike, like it's interesting because it reminds me of like, I'm sure you've seen the movie Happy Gilmore, and Happy's playing in the tournament, and on the first hole he drives the green and then he like six putts, and then on the second hole he gets a hole in one on a par four, and he's like, wow, I should just do that every time. And I feel like that's what Rosenstrike did tonight, like the patience and all that stuff. It's like he gets it on the green and then he six putts, but eventually the ball will go in the hole. And then when he's like, you know what, it's so much easier to just get the ball in the hole off the tee. He just opens up when he, like, as soon as he's ready to open up and be like, dude, I'm done with this. Like, he could just end the fight. So I find it very strange. Like, why don't you just do that the whole time? Like, I know you're a counter striker, but I feel like if he just got a little more aggressive, he would end a lot of fights very quickly. And I feel like we'd be talking about him in a different place right now. Like, do you feel the same way, or is he doing everything right based on his experience and where he's going in his career at this point?
He's finding who he's fighting like biggie boy fights. I mean, if what you're describing is a different fighter, to be honest, I mean, that's just not him. He kind of just lulls you into safety. Like you just Sakai, he starts out real tight, he's throwing the leg kicks. He's really, he's on edge, but then by the end of the round, the round's almost over. It's like, okay, we're about done with this. Let's go into the second round. And that's when Rosenstrike just kind of saves all that energy and just kind of has that one explosion, and that's all he needs. He used Rosenstrike used the cage well. He backed up Sakai along that cage, and when he had to get out of the way, he ran into that cage. It wasn't far enough away to get around that left hook. It hit him, it'll be interesting. I don't want to say it's early. I know no one's saying early stoppage, but if the ref wanted to just let a couple more ground and pound shots go, what ended with 1 second left, who knows what happens, but it is what it is. It ended. I think AK said it. I mean, that's kind of, I don't think we learned very much. That's Rosenstrike. And wait, so he's lost to Francis in 10 seconds or whatever, and he lost a lackluster fight against Cyril Gane. He's still obviously an A-level heavyweight in the UFC. I don't know. I really don't know. I don't think I know we like to learn things, new things about fighters after, a fight, but yeah, I think we're kind of the same place with him.
I think Herbin did a good job with a couple of the stoppages today. We're very quick to criticize him, and I do think he is, you know, I do think overall he's not a great official, but when he does well, I do think, or does his job, I do think it's worth pointing out. I thought the stoppage was fine. You know, it's like you have to ignore, of course, how much time is left in the clock. That's not the referee's responsibility, right? So that was fine. And then I actually thought I saw him taking some flack for the Ricci stoppage. Maybe Ricci took a few more punches than she needed to, but I thought the stoppage was just at the right time. He could have stopped it earlier. If he stopped it earlier, I thought
we were going too early.
Yeah, no, it's the opposite. I definitely saw people complaining because she was taking a lot of shots from Figueroa, and she already had like the size disadvantage, so it was just like a bad video. It just looked like she was getting beaten up, so I think somebody like, oh, just wave it off like earlier, and I thought that was just right. So so two bits of props there for Herb Dean. I thought those stoppages were fine.
Yeah, I had no issue with that stoppage either, because even
it was a mercy stoppage.
Yeah, Ricci got back. Yeah, Ricci actually like got back to her feet. She tied her up a little bit, and then as soon as like Fioro like got loose and started throwing again, like Dean was just like, "Nope, we're done." Like, I gave you a chance. Now she's starting to land again. And see it. She hopped, stepped, and Herb stepped right in and stopped the fight.
Ricci was still defending herself and throwing kicks. I mean, it was like she threw a kick. And I mean, I didn't like the stoppage, but I knew who was going to win the fight, so I didn't care either.
Yeah.
I mean, it was not, like, we didn't need to see any more. Like, it was just going to get worse and worse. Yeah. Like, he gave her a chance to stay in it. As soon as she started throwing again, he stopped it, and I think that's fine. So good on him. How about Marcin Tybura, gentlemen? 5 in a row. Wal Harris seemed like he got everybody fired up. Everyone's getting excited. And then Tybura takes him down and stops the fight with less than a minute to go. And Walt Harris loses again. Tybura has won 5 in a row. I don't think anybody's stock improved more probably in this entire night than Marcin Tybura, for being honest. Like, I think Ponzinibbio and Baeza was a tremendous fight, but in terms of like individual stocks rising, where it puts them in their respective divisions, I think Tybura is probably the guy, right, at this point? Like, am I crazy saying that?
He's top 10 now, so I don't think anyone else broke into the top 10 on this card. So yeah, you're probably right. There's a stock.
AK shaking his head.
No, I'm shaking my head just thinking like, why was Harris ranked higher? What's his big win that put him? Alexio Linick. So Alexio Linick was his big win, and that put Walt Harris in the top 10. That's a bit strange.
Well, he had four.
Linick was top 10 at the time though, when he beat him, right?
I guess that's right. That's what I'm saying. And it seems so long ago now.
It was like a 10-second knockout, and before that, he had like
a 50-second knockout
over Spivak.
Right,
and then before that, he did win a split over Andre, but I know it got overturned. USADA, and before that, he knocked out. So he had like 3 or 4 knockouts and a win over Arlovski. So I don't know why he was ranked higher. I do know why he was ranked higher. Marcin Tybura had not beaten and ranked heavyweight yet.
Yeah, we said this on the shows leading up, like the quality competition that Tybura has faced. It's not the sexiest lineup during that fight.
He's faced a lot of high level fighters. He just hasn't beaten them. But that's not a knock on the man. His ranking just wasn't indicative to his skill set today. He's obviously gotten better. So if they fought in 2019, maybe Walt Harris wins.
Maybe he's too polite after. I don't really think that it's time for me to start talking about title shot.
I'm like, working out for his teammate Jan. Worked out for his teammate Jan. Was nice all the way to a title fight.
Yeah, just him, man. Yeah, Tybura is gonna accidentally be the heavyweight champion. He all of a sudden, he's like, you know, like, we don't know, man. I don't know. I didn't take, I thought Tybura was gonna win it. Facing Walt Harris at this point in his career and his life. I mean, I said coming into this, the story is going to, no matter what happens in this fight, the story is still going to be Walt Harris, win or lose.
Oh, and there was on Twitter Reacts, there was one tweet about Marcin Tybura, and all of the tweets were about Walt Harris winning or like supporting or losing.
Yeah. And that's why I don't, Walt Harris, I mean, but Tybura looked good. to me, he didn't look like a world beater or whatever. Like when I say world beater, like a top five heavyweight. Like I think Rozenstruik would, you know, mess up Tybura pretty good, actually. But or Ansakaya, honestly, I think Tybura is kind of like right around there. I just thought Walt Harris looked really bad tonight, and I know he looked good for about 30 seconds or so, but that's not enough. And whatever Walt Harris entered the cage tonight isn't the Walt Harris that we thought was the potential title contender, you know, a year and a half ago. That's just it's a different person for, you know, a lot of reasons.
He reminds me of Ovin St. Preux, where I think he would be really good if he went to like a really high level MMA gym. From what I like, because when he fought in Jacksonville against Overeem, we could hear his that was obviously one of the first pandemic cards. We could hear his corner, and his corner was not doing him any favors. Eric Anders had the same corner, obviously, and I would even group Eric Anders in there. Maybe they'd just be better with the change of scenery, because we've heard how good they are in the gym, but if you're the best in the gym, that's probably not how you grow as a mixed martial artist. So this is just me speculating too, but yeah, Walt Harris is also almost 500 record. He's like 13-10. Didn't he get cut from the UFC at one point and then fight his way back? Maybe he's just not, he hits really hard, and if you can avoid that, you can beat him, and that's pretty much it.
Yeah, was the blueprint for beating Walt Harris, like, but even quicker. You know, we thought, oh, Tybura weathers the round in the first storm, and then, you know, gets a takedown in the second, either wins by a submission or TKO or wins a decision. And it was that, but just so much faster. It just happened so quickly. Maybe because of the small cage, Casey. Maybe our old small cage helped out with that. But the handling of his career, you know, in his last few fights has been horrible. It's been horrible. Obviously, you know, the big story surrounding, you know, Walt over his last three fights is the Anaya Blanchard tragedy, of course, the death of his stepdaughter. And, you know, none of us are saying like, that story brought him a lot of mainstream attention and a lot of sympathy and painted him in a sympathetic light, and which in sports is something that, you know, can be really good for an athlete. It's horrible that this happens to them. It's horrible that the story, has to come to light in this way. But for Walt, it added a different context to his fight with Overeem, right? So you can't fault him for the Overeem matchup, because that was previously booked, right, before the ahead of the Anaya Blanchard thing, and of course was delayed because of the horrible thing that happened. So no issue there. And then matching him with him, and if he had beaten Overeem, what a moment that would have been, right? And he almost did, right? We almost had like an all-time great MMA sports moment, just great human story if he'd done that. But then matching him up with Volkov after was just...
Oh, that was the worst.
Stupid.
I can't believe the UFC did that. I can't believe Walt Harris's handlers or his coaches accepted that fight. It's like, did anyone watch Volkov? Did anyone know who Volkov was? Did they confuse him for someone else? But... that's in the past.
And look, we all want to see him, Walt Harris, get a win because of this horrible thing that happened. I'm not saying that, you know, that the ESPN and the UFC should like exploit this story for like, you know, to just generate interest. But it would feel so like almost cathartic for all of us to say, okay, we want to see something good happen for Walt Harris. It's just this horrible, horrible thing that happened to him. And then, so it's just a matchup with these guys who are just not fair matchups, really tough fights. I'll just tell people before the show, we were sort of suggesting at first he needs to be matched up with a contender series guy, and then I said not a contender series contract winner. He should go against a guy who loses on a contender series. That is how badly we need to get Walt Harris in here, just to have this ray of sunshine, this brief ray of sunshine in the wake of all these bad things that have happened for him. But I don't know, three straight losses. I don't know where they go with him for now.
Maybe he doesn't want that. Like, maybe he just wants to fight a really high level fighter.
Of course. Of course.
I'm not saying that he shouldn't, but like,
every fighter wants that, but that's why you have coaches and managers.
But like,
what if he does? Matchmakers.
I understand. Yeah. I understand that. But I mean, to give him guys that are losing contender series guys, like what? Like, he's probably still top 15 ranked. He's going to still be in the top 15 technically. And then he loses to one of those guys, and then he'd be 13-12 or something like that. Maybe he's just not a UFC heavyweight.
Mm. But like I said,
yeah, I just don't know what you do with him at this point.
He got his butt kicked tonight, and we talked about Tabor for a little bit, but the rest of it is about Walt Harris, and that's why I felt coming to this fight. This fight is almost it's gonna be a win for Tabor, but it's not gonna move him up in terms of like, oh, he'll be like a pay per view co-main event or something like that. He's not gonna be a featured fight, you know, or anything like that. He's still gonna be just a fight night co-main event, you know, at best.
Listen, the UFC needs to do him a favor for putting him in this spot. You won 4 in a row. Now we're going to hand you the like white meat baby face that everybody's rooting for. And if you beat him, like literally nothing happens. Like you may not be like booed out of the building, but no one's going to care. It's just because you're beating Walt Harris. So I think you give him a little on to the next one. Spoiler, because I said it earlier, he should fight Jarzina Rosenstrike next. He deserves that. They should give him that fight.
Tabor? That makes sense.
I would rather watch Tybura fight Jarzinho than watch Curtis Blades fight Jarzinho. There you go. Because those are the only two fights you can make.
Yeah.
Nothing else makes any sense.
Yeah, I like that.
Jose is shaking his head. That look is just.
I don't like either of those fights. Jairzinho's probably top five, so I don't know. Give him Curtis Blades. He's also top five. I know you might not like. I know it's probably not going to be a fun, exciting fight, but like, F it. Like Derek Lewis decapitated Curtis Blades. Why can't Jairzinho Rosenstreich? And or the guy that kept calling out Jairzinho Rosenstreich, he's not even ranked. So if we're having him fight backwards, give him a guy that will talk all that greasiness. Ben Rothwell hates Jairzinho Rosenstreich. Apparently,
they don't like each other.
Ben Rothwell's like another gift for Jairzinho Rosenstreich on Twitter. Like he's just like referee, gifted him another W. I'm like, all of a sudden I want to see Ben Rothwell fight Jairzinho Rosenstreich. So, hey, Martin Tabor, you're really nice. Jairzinho also doesn't really talk a lot. You're not going to sell anything. So Jairzinho, you know what? If we're fantasy matchmaking and we want you to fight behind you, fight a guy with like 1,000 fights that already has beef with you. That's my pick. If we're going to have him fight back, have him fight someone that's at least going to drum up interest to get people to tune in.
I don't mind it.
Or have him fight Curtis Blades. Losing to a top five heavyweight is nothing to hang your head at.
Who do you want Curtis Blades to fight, Mr. Heck?
Nobody for a long time after that knockout loss. Oh, come on, dude. That was brutal. That was nasty.
Dude, one of the worst knockouts of the year. One-shot knockouts aren't as bad. Like it's those.
That wasn't a one-shot meetings. Knockout. That was not a one-shot knockout. It should have been a one-shot knockout, but Derek Lewis landed a couple of pretty devastating punches after the fact.
Oh, yeah.
Well, once...
That was a bad knockout.
If Blades clears his CT scans and all that, he's cleared to go.
That was 4 months ago. We can't wait until September, October to have him fight.
Have him fight in October. Have him fight in Madison Square Garden. They both have wins in Madison Square Garden. Have him fight MSG in November.
Gan and Volkov are about to fight. You got Abdurakhimov and Chris Dawkins about to fight. So there's options for him. We just don't need to book him a fight right now.
If Volkov wins, Volkov Jairzinho would be a fun fight too.
Yeah, there you go.
I just don't like giving people favors like, hey, you fought Walt Harris. We're going to give you a huge jump up in competition. Sucks to the other guy.
He's got the longest winning streak.
With one ranked heavyweight, and all of a sudden you want to throw him in with like the fourth heavyweight? Not my bag. If they make it, fine.
Dude, he's going to be ranked two spots behind Jairzinho on a 5-fight winning streak. He's going to be the number 8 ranked heavyweight in the world come Tuesday.
Who's Shamil fighting?
Chris Dawkins.
Give him the winner of that. He already has a loss to Shamil. He can avenge it, and then Chris Dawkins can pick up another win over a very nice man.
I'm just saying, both these guys got first-round finishes. They could both turn around relatively quick. If you need
give
to fill Tabor a spot,
the title shot.
You guys in there.
F it.
Give Tabor you know the what? Title shot.
You know
that's,
what?
That's what we're all beating around the bush. That's what we all want.
Lewis, you know what? Lewis and Ngannou is not official. It's not official. It hasn't
you know
been
what? Even,
Tabor interim title. Interim heavyweight title.
You know what? Because we're giving Martin Tabor a favor, let's just give him John Jones. Why not? Have him introduce John Jones to the heavyweight
title. Tabor, John Jones, okay interim heavyweight title. Boom.
No, interim. No, we're stripping. No, interim.
Strip Francis, give him the BMF, but two belts on the line, heavyweight title and BMF.
Yeah. This escalated.
Martin Tabor.
Yeah.
Hey, can we talk about Brock Tabor's? Like, does he have the worst nickname?
Tabor versus Brock, like, Lesnar.
What's Tabor's nickname?
Tabor.
That's not a nickname.
Martin Tibor Tabora.
It's perfect.
I'm bumping him down the rankings because of his nickname, and I won in the fight for the title.
It's like Smitty. It's Joe Smitty Smith.
We turn him into Mick Foley all of a sudden. Now he's like the most popular. Now we love Marcin Tybura. It's amazing.
If he were in New England, you guys would. That's the nickname you guys would. That's a very New Englandy nickname, right? You guys, hey Tibor. That's not a very Canadian. Actually, that's a very Canadian thing. A very Canadian hockey team.
I don't think there would be a man in New England named Marcin Tibura. I'm not going to lie.
If he moved there, I think he'd become Tibur pretty quickly.
I would rather live in Poland than like where does Gabriel Gonzaga live? Doesn't he live like in the middle of nowhere in New England?
He's like in
like a,
really
like he's in Massachusetts, but like
yeah, in like the middle of nowhere. And then like Glover Teixeira lives in like a real random place in Connecticut too. Connecticut. For whatever reason, MMA fighters move to just random cities in New England for no reason.
Because you got gym space and it's probably cheaper. I don't know.
They turn a lot of these warehouses into gyms.
Beautiful fall weather. Beautiful autumns.
This message comes from Apple Card. Earn up to 3% daily cash back on every purchase every day. Then grow it at 4.50% annual percentage yield when you open a savings account with Apple Card. Visit apple.co/cardcalculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card subject to credit approval. Savings available to Apple Card owners subject to eligibility. Savings accounts provided by Goldman Sachs Bank USA. Member FDIC. Terms apply.
Jose may know the answer to this question. I don't know if any of the other gentlemen have seen this, but we have bonuses.
I saw. People are going to be upset.
Okay.
Fight of the night's easy. Yeah.
Okay.
All right, Casey. Can you guess the performance bonuses?
Performance bonus has to go to Montana De La Rosa and Rosenstruik. That's the only
one.
Thing
you got one out of two.
You got one out of two.
Montana didn't win.
None of the ladies won.
Martin Tybura.
Oh my God.
Mankind, Cactus Jack, Dude Love. He got the other bonus.
You didn't say champion.
Future champion.
John Jones's next opponent got the other bonus.
All right.
Yeah, that would have been nice for Montana because that was a really. I love what she showed. I should have given it to both ladies. I think one lady deserved it.
I think the other lady got a. She just did what she was supposed to do.
Yeah. Jared. Yeah. This goes with Casey's level of competition has to matter a little bit. And it's no disrespect to Rishi. I actually think Rishi will look really good when she actually goes back down to 115. She's not a 125. She looked miniature.
Oh, God, no.
And credit to her.
Less than a week's notice. That's just.
Right? They had to find a straw weight. Otherwise, I can't think of any flyweights that would have been able to make that on 3 days. So they'll give her another shot at straw weight, and then we'll see what she can do. But she looked pretty good.
If Perreault wouldn't have done that against her original opponent,
Moroz.
If she wouldn't have done that against Moroz, yeah, of course she would have got 50K. Then we'd be talking about her in a much different light. But, I know I'm trying to jump down the card now with Perreault, but she just did what she was supposed to do. I didn't really take too much from it, to be honest. I know everyone's like, whoa, but competition.
Casey's just down. Just down on man, poor Fiora.
but doing what
she needs to do. You know, she could have gone out there and just tried to steamroll her, but she was very calm, cool, and collected in there. Picked her shots. Was very patient. You know, that's only her second UFC fight. I know she's got a long career in combat sports.
That was Rishi's first fight, so. I mean, she wasn't fighting a veteran. That's what I'm saying. If she wouldn't have done it against Moroz, we're having a much different conversation. If she could have done it against Moroz, but
right. But this isn't like Yusuf Salal going from like one opponent and then getting Ilya Topuria on less than a week's notice like he did. This is like it is what it is. Like you're preparing for a certain fighter, you get a completely different fighter. Yeah.
And she gets two checks, and then they have more highlights for her. And actually, from the UFC's perspective, this is awesome. Like, it's because no one's gonna, when they look at the highlights, no one's gonna go, hey, that she was only a week's notice. That's not even near her weight class. We're not gonna remember that, you know? But they had the highlights for her. And then her next fight will be against a tougher opponent. I would love to see her against Lipsky, actually. But, I think she deserves someone right outside that, you know, outside that top 10 for Fro. Fierro.
Oh, I know. There's only one opponent for her. There's only one fight to make and one fight only. What? And I will tell you tomorrow and on to the next one.
I think that's
my wild card. That's my wild card pick. And it's a doozy.
Strikers. Because we haven't against Lipsky, just strike.
And if AK really thinks about it, there's one fighter on this roster that I have had this kind of relationship with in terms of matchmaking.
Oh.
You already know who it is.
Yes.
You know it is.
I'll guess it on tomorrow's show. Remind me to guess it.
You know it is. Definitely know who it is.
I think so. But De La Rosa, I would have been fine with her getting the other bonus over Tabora. I love Tabora. But again, I think her first ever knockout, that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
And just the aggression and killer instinct she showed on the ground today. Oh, that was fun to watch.
It was a great performance.
Yeah.
I thought Lipsky was going to win. And I was like really impressed by De La Rosa. I kind of gave up on her, to be honest. But as far as like a top contender at flyweight, I'm not saying she is a top contender, but what she showed tonight can make me believe that, though.
She has time. She's young. She's young. Yeah. What is she, like 26? 26. Yeah, she's young.
Because I believe we talked about the line, and a lot of people commented on the line. Minus 260 was the line on Montana De La Rosa ending in that fight. A lot of people thought that was too wide. I thought Montana was going to put her away quick. Or either at second, I thought Montana was going to finish her. I thought she was going to submit her. I didn't think she'd TKO her. Her striking's gotten way better since going out to elevation.
Yeah, that's what I mean. That was an improved version of her tonight. I thought we were going to see an improved version of Lipsky, with her being at ATT. Maybe it's not enough time right now. I still have faith in Lipsky. I think she's a very marketable fighter and really good. But De La Rosa surprised me tonight, and I like being surprised.
She needs to be like either the Duchess of Violence or like the new Queen of Violence after that performance. Like that first elbow she landed, that was nasty. Busted her right open. Mm-hmm. Good performance, man. She looked real good. She deserved a bonus tonight. She got the big fat hose job, as we like to say on this program. But I would be before we go to the peeps, I would we have to talk about the fight of this night. Miguel Baez versus Santiago Ponzinibbio. Good God almighty. That was so much fun to watch. Unfortunately, the middleweights had to follow it, and it was kind of like Chris Jericho and Triple H trying to follow The Rock versus Hulk Hogan at WrestleMania. Like, it just doesn't matter what fight it is.
You know what that was? That was Henry Cejudo and Sergio Pettis following Justin Gaethje and Eddie Alvarez.
Yeah, that's probably a better example.
And then immediately after, Alistair Overeem got his head decapitated. That's why no one remembers Cejudo, Sergio Pettis.
That's right. There's nothing that you could have done, but that fight was not good. But let's talk about, Ponzinibbio Baez, it was awesome. First of all, AK, did you agree with the judges?
Yeah. I had last two rounds for Baez. For Ponzinibbio, excuse me. So no issue there. This holding definitely lived up to what I remember on the one of the either the Q&A or the preview show. Someone was kind of asking like, what's a deep cut for like fight of the night? And we all think really hard because all of us were just like, it's going to be Ponzinibbio and Baez. Like we can give you other answers, but we're really just doing it for the sake of the show. Like none of us really, I think I might've even said, I'm sure it's on record. I might've said Delice and Staropoli. I don't know, something. Or maybe I said Rodriguez, Todorovic. Either way, whichever one I picked, it wasn't close to anywhere near what Ponzinibbio and Baez delivered. It was just, I love this fight. I think some people are already kind of asking like, oh, were we just caught up in the moment? Like when we were kind of looking at it as a potential fight of the year candidate. We'll see. Obviously, we'll see 6 months from now. Is it still, does it make the top five? I don't know. Maybe it doesn't make the top five. But is it in the talks for the top five? Easily. It has everything you want. It had great action. It had a story. You know, it was like after the first like 5 minutes, people were like, yo, Ponzinibbio, he doesn't look good. Those leg kicks, he's done. He's done. Those calf kicks, he's done. But you could see him really like not panicking. He wasn't panicked. He was slipping only because of all those damn ads on the mat. And then he was finding his range.
He was losing. He just didn't have the muscles on his feet were just all messed up. Yeah.
But he adjusted. He kind of tightened up his stance and everything, whatever he had to do just to, so he could still be effective on the feet. And he really just started cranking up the pressure. And he did it against a guy who he knows is less experienced than him, who hasn't been in the wars that he's been in. That's how a veteran wins a fight. Baeza, I think Baeza is the more skilled fighter. This is where experience and toughness and everything that Ponzinibbio has been through comes into play. And I loved that he did not accept that he's down a round. Like, oh, well, I'm just outclassed tonight. He's like, nope, I think I'm the better fighter. I'm coming back. And Baeza was right there with him. Just didn't have that extra gear tonight. And that's fine. He was nothing wrong. He fought an amazing fight and Ponzinibbio was just better.
This will be a very pivotal night in the career of Miguel Baeza. Like, however he responds to this will probably write most of his career. Like, if he bounces back with a win, you're just like, oh boy, like that was a learning experience. He took everything from that and he grew from it. And I feel like he will. Like, I don't feel like his stock drops at all. And Jose, I want to get your thoughts on the fight. I tweeted out, this was very Josh Emmett versus Shane Burgos-esque. Like, this is a 3-round fight that when we run down like our year end list, like this will be on the list. Like, this probably won't win, but you had to put, like, we knew Josh Emmett versus Shane Burgos wasn't going to win, but we knew it had to be on that list. I feel like this fight kind of is right around the same level, if that makes sense.
Yeah. I mean, after this fight ended, I was like, God damn it. I wish there were two more rounds. Imagine five rounds of those two men throwing down. Sure, maybe Miguel Baeza wins just based on youth. Maybe his body doesn't just fall apart after the final two rounds, and Santiago's does. But yeah, it's rare when a fight that we all kind of earmark is like the people's main event and lives up to it, and they did this, blew all expectations out of the water. I think I didn't pick this for fight of the night. I thought the winner of this would get a performance bonus. I thought someone was going to get stopped in this fight, and maybe it would have been a double bonus at best, but one of the better fights we've seen in a long time in terms of competitiveness, because like the fights between like Jiri and Dom Reyes, or like Holloway, Cater, even like Oliveira, Chandler, Barbosa, Burgos, these are the ones that are just like off the top of my head for like possible fight of the years type stuff. Even Poirier and McGregor, for as long as it lasted, those had finishes. It didn't really reach the end. This kind of reminds me of the, he just fought on this card. Davis, Mason Jones, like that fight card, like the previews, preview shows and the Q&As for that, we were like, there's no possible way this fight isn't at least fun. Might not win fight of the night, but it's going to be an epic fight. And we kind of earmarked that. It reminds me of that too, like just a 3-round fight where they're just beating the soul out of each other. And then they both leave. I remember like their entire bodies in the octagon and they go home $50,000 richer. So it kind of reminds me of that as opposed to the others because of levels of competition and all this kind of stuff. But yeah, fantastic fight. Blew all expectations out of the water. And I can't wait for either man to return to the octagon and fight whoever, because that was a high action fight all around.
Yeah, there's been some really good 3-round fights this year. Some really fun ones. What did you think of it, Casey? As an astute martial artist yourself, what did you think of these performances by both of these gentlemen?
Yeah, it just rolled, like you said. AK said it kind of had the. Well, I think why we see a lot of kind of in boxing and in films and everything is because in boxing, since the fight's longer, the fights tend to have more of a story. You know, it's not you have up and down. You know, you can kind of give rounds away to come back later. And this fight but MMA, we had that today. I mean, after the first round, I'm like going, dang, Baeza, he's going to be a champ in a year. Holy moly. I guess, I was thinking Ponzinibbio was done. You know, I guess, well, you know, he had a good run, but I don't think we're going to see him, you know, in the rankings, you know, very much longer. Then, you know, I go get a soda, come back. I'm like, holy crap, you know, Ponzinibbio's got it. You know, he's coming back and like, more than any other combat sport, you know, experience and just being freaking tough counts for so much more. And that's what Ponzinibbio had in this fight over Baeza. I'm not saying Baeza doesn't have the toughness, but he just couldn't find it, I guess. And Ponzinibbio he had it. He wanted it. He needed that win. It was just, it was a great, if I had a story, I love prospects versus vet fights, perfect placement on the card. And yeah, great fight. Well, one fight of the year, but you know, definitely when you have those little honorable mention, you know, paragraphs at the very, the bottom of the, you know, article, this fight would definitely be one of those.
The numbers were pretty wild in this fight. First round, significant strikes total, by the way. Santiago Ponzinibbio outlanded Miguel Baeza 121 to 104. So very, very close. Round one, Baeza 39 to 15. Most of those are the nasty leg kicks that he landed. Dude. And then Ponzinibbio just got pissed. Round two, 47-27 Ponzinibbio. Round three, 59-38 was the third round in terms of significant strikes. Wild fight, man. So good.
He landed almost 60 significant strikes in that last round.
He landed 53% of his strikes. He's 59 of 111 in round three.
Do leg strikes count as significant strikes? I'm not even – do they?
Yeah.
It depends. Yep, it depends. Okay. Yeah.
Oh, I hope so. I hope they count. I hope they count. That's all I'm saying.
You know how many leg kicks? I don't know how many leg kicks Miguel Baeza landed in that fight? What? Take a guess.
Landed. At least 25, right?
AK, you got a guess?
I mean, that was gonna be my number, but I'll go higher because I'll say 35.
Jose.
1 million.
43 prime numbers.
44.
Dang.
44 of 49 That's leg kicks.
Dang it. I missed one. I was keeping track.
That's a lot.
Your counter was off, Jose. Your counter was off.
That's a lot.
That's when he landed
Ponzinibbio landed some good ones too. Mm-hmm. He landed 11 of them, but all those counted. Those were all brutal. Deep, nasty.
This will make Miguel Baeza better. This will be a fight when Miguel Baeza now goes on like a 5 or 6 fight win streak. We're gonna look back and be like, what was his last loss? He's gonna be like, oh yeah, that fight with Ponzinibbio.
I hope he doesn't get a massive step up in competition again. All of a sudden, he's the Edmund of the welterweight division, where he was kind of earmarked as his title
laterally instead of
Yeah. So all of a sudden he's 0-2 against like high level welterweights. And we're like, oh, was he even good? Which clearly the answer is yes. But I would like him more, you know, you guys know what I'm saying. I don't want him to go 0-2.
Yeah.
And dude, there's no shortage of welterweights that Baeza could face.
Who's you know? I had someone that I wanted to watch team fight. I can't remember who. Such as
him and Conda would have been really fun.
Yeah.
But then like this, the other part of me that's like, I don't want to see Condit fight a guy like Miguel Baeza, but now he's fighting Max Griffin. So all bets are off at this point. Max is an animal too.
That fight could have been just as good. I mean, like I said, Condit's got that toughness and that experience too, which is what I think why Ponzinibbio won this fight. And, but either way, but Baeza, I'm excited to see both gentlemen.
How about Alex Morono? For Baeza.
That's actually in
my internal rankings, they're probably right there. Morono's I wouldn't say he's as violent a fighter as Ponzinibbio, but he's still like a high level fighter and he's coming off the biggest win of his career. So I think that'd just be a fun fight. Who's Nico Price fighting? Isn't Price fighting someone in Tim Means, Miguel Baeza, Tim Means, that'd be a scrap too.
Means is fighting somebody. Who is he fighting?
I don't know.
Means has a
fight. I think he can't really screw up the booking.
Cowboy Oliveira, that'd be a fun fight too.
I like Cowboy Oliveira.
Oh, Danny Roberts, fighting Danny Roberts.
Dude, give him the winner of that. Or the loser. Give him either one.
Give them both.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. Baeza can fight anybody, and I will watch, and I will enjoy. It'll
What's
be fun.
What's Glenn Nelson doing these days?
Throw him in there with the King of Kung Fu. That's always fun.
Yeah,
that'd but look at this. You know, we're more interested in seeing Baeza in his next fight. We're talking more about the guy that lost and the guy that won. I think that's really interesting.
I think it's hard to fantasy matchmake. I think it's more interesting to fantasy matchmake losers because winners.
I agree. Yeah,
you know. So like Santiago, like if Bilal Muhammad wins, that'd be a fun fight because Damian Maia is retiring. Who's doing Neil Magny? Neil Magny. He already beat Neil Magny. Maybe the winner of Brady and Kevin Lee, because that they would be ranked. That'd be a fun fight.
It's tough. It's tough, man.
It's tough because he's knocked out Neil Magny, but then he got knocked out by Li Jingliang, and then Neil Magny pieced up Li Jingliang. There's like this triangle where they all just beat each other.
Yeah, it screws up the MMA math.
Yeah.
And it was perfect.
Yeah. Tyron Woodley's gone. Roy McDonald's not in the UFC. Vicente Luque is probably going to have to fight way up. You know who he should have fought because they have beef before he dropped back down? RDA. Him and RDA do not like each other. That's like a, if you ask Guillermo, that's a lost fight for like the Brazilian Argentina scene, MMA yeah. scene, that they hate each other.
Really? I didn't know that was a rivalry.
That fight was discussed at some point.
It was. Ask Guillermo, if Guillermo's on the A side or anything like that, ask him. He's just like, oh, why hasn't that fight happened? He's been calling for that fight forever.
Okay, what about... we have to do it because it is tradition at some point to mention this person's name. At least it was last year. Every show we had to mention this person.
Don't do it. You don't have to do it.
If they don't do Magny versus Chimaev, why not Ponzinibbio versus Chimaev?
Cool. Love it. Awesome.
I feel like that makes so much sense.
Ponzinibbio beat Magny if Magny's already matched up with someone else. F it. Or he was Santiago Ponzinibbio was supposed to fight Robbie Lawler before they both had health issues.
That's right.
I still want to watch that fight, even though Robbie Lawler's not ranked.
You see, welterweight's great.
Jeff Neal versus
he's taking time off.
He'll be out for a while.
He's gonna be out for a while.
Yeah, because blood infection.
We'll let him rest up for another few months.
Yes,
before we start throwing his name out there.
Shall we go to the peeps?
Sure.
Let's go to the peeps for a few moments.
I always have the last question up. All right, here we got. Let me see.
I guess the King of Kung Fu is the winner of nicknames since he got the win today.
There you go.
Hold on a second.
This week on The Pitch, would you like fries with that?
People are what make franchises run. The person who knows the business inside and out.
Yep.
Not someone who came off Wall Street because their check clears. Franchairs is the first investment marketplace where people can invest in franchises.
So you said $800 billion is what this market is a year. And hundreds of businesses are actually franchised businesses.
Thousands.
Thousands and thousands.
There are more brands franchised than there are stocks on the NASDAC.
Oh.
You're raising a $4 million price round.
And what are the terms on that?
The $19 million post-money valuation.
Okay. And do you not think that the valuation is a little frothy?
This week, things get frothy when Kenny Rose brings a new alternative investment class to retail investors. Go right now and subscribe to The Pitch, wherever you listen to podcasts.
Thoughts on Montana De La Rosa's win? To me, she is an underappreciated fighter. Her groundwork today against Ariane Lipsky was great. Yeah, she looked awesome.
Yeah, I think.
So we spoke about it before, but she showed aggression.
The only knock I have on Montana De La Rosa, and I think she's an awesome fighter, is she's beat. Like I think it's what Casey said with like when Manon won, she beats the women that I think we all kind of assume she's going to beat and the way she's going to beat them. This Lipsky win, I think, was the first one I was like really torn between Montana and Ariana. But like she's lost to Vivian Araújo, who's phenomenal. Andrea Lee, phenomenal. And then she's beaten Rachel Ostovich and Nadia Kazem by submission. And I don't have anything against either women, but there's a reason they're not in the UFC right now. I think Rachel Ostovich was under 500 when she was released, and Nadia's last two losses weren't the best showing. If you remember, she got kind of, she did the fake glove touch and then got dropped immediately and kind of forgot a punch. And then Mara Romero Barella, I think a lot of people kind of, they're like, there's better women outside the UFC that should be in the UFC. So it's kind of like the Marcin Tybura thing I was saying, where she's beating all the people that she should be and she's lost to like the big steps up in competition. This Lipsky win was awesome, and I think it's the first time I was like torn between the two opponents, and Montana surprised me for sure. Also, I fell into the trap of reading Guillerme's interview with Lipsky before, and she talked up her wrestling and grappling a lot, so I was like, oh, it's a new Ariana Lipsky, and then just got stopped for the second fight in a row.
Well, I just thought her training with one of the best camps in the world, and
specifically and women, for women MMA.
Yeah, yeah, and like, you know, I've seen those photos of her with all the other, I can't name all, but all high level women, 35 to 15 or so. I was like, okay, she has a great camp around her. So I was surprised.
Maybe she's not long enough. I think didn't Johnny Walker train a TriStar for a bit and then got stopped in his first fight with TriStar, and he was like, it just wasn't there long enough.
Yeah,
that happens sometimes.
You know,
I mean, even in the Araujo loss, like, you saw the improvements on the feet just from short time she spent there.
Well, like, that's what I'm saying. Like, she's beating
staying
everyone.
Staying on your feet with Araujo is not a good idea.
Exactly.
But at least she, showed some. She showed something. She did better than a lot of other women would have done.
For sure. Great fighter.
You know who really benefited from a change of camps today that was on this card was Mason Jones, his move to Alpha Male, because they were talking a lot about he needs to beef up his wrestling. I think Michael Bissing was joking about him being from Wales, and like, I can't believe he would move from Wales to live in California or something. So he's taking a little shot at the Welsh people, but the climate in Wales. You saw, it's unfortunate that Mason Jones's fight ended, with an eye poke, because he was really showing. Oh, was there a question that was going to load that up, Casey?
Let's talk about that eye poke. Was that a fight ender?
I think we all are in agreement on that. But what else could he have done?
Yeah,
that fight wasn't going well for him.
Yeah, I know.
He's just like, you know what? If I'm only getting half my paycheck, son, you're only getting half your paycheck.
I'm doing Dana White a favor here. Sorry, Mason. And Mason was super polite about it after, except for I think he didn't want to touch gloves after. I think he was a little annoyed that Alan Patrick couldn't continue. But when the referee was talking to him, he was very polite. He was like, "Yeah, it's my fault." He's like, "My fault. It wasn't intentional, but I know that I shouldn't have had my finger probably out there."
He probably has Sean's voice in the back of his head.
Yeah,
from telling him to calm down from Fight Island.
But he looked great tonight. He was putting it all together. He was on his way to either, he's probably a TKO Alan Patrick or I get a very one-sided decision win. Oddly, he's 0-1 with a no contest. So winless in his first two appearances. I think Mason Jones is going to be a really good fighter in the UFC. This is just kind of a weird, rocky start to his UFC career. But he looked great. And I think that going to Team Alpha Male, huge. I think it really paid off.
It's just only a matter of time before he starts looking for the guillotine immediately.
Yes. Yeah. Jump the ghillie.
Wait, let's talk about the best part of the night right here.
I love that too.
Yeah.
Like, the main card, we'd only be like one fight into. We're only gonna be one fight into the main card next Saturday.
There's three five round fights in Glendale. Let's not forget that.
So we'll see you at 3:30 a.m. Eastern next Saturday for the post fight show, because you still got the press conferences as well to get to.
I can't wait. If only Delete Zane Staropoli had gotten the five round treatment as well, eh? Gosh, it's not fair. Why?
We're gonna have the main and co-main and Diaz Leon, probably the winners and losers, plus Dana White. So we're going to have, what, 7 press conferences coming at most? It's going to be a time.
All right. Speaking of, part of tonight's festivities, all right, we'll answer this. Okay. I picked Tybura up, but felt really bad for Harris. Do you think he'll get cut from this, or maybe one or two more losses, or not anytime soon?
I think his next fight will be, depending who the opponent is, if they give him someone outside the top 20, 25, if he loses that fight, then we're talking release possibility. If they give him another top 15, top 10 opponent, which they shouldn't, but if he loses against someone like that level, I think he'll have a little more rope, but it's not looking good for Mr. Harris and his career right now in the UFC. It's very desperate times coming up.
Yeah, heavyweights have a longer leash. It's not a very deep division. Those who are on the lower end usually are not very good. So you and Walt Harris, beyond his storyline, he brings a certain level of excitement to his fights. He's exactly the kind of heavyweight that Dana White and the matchmakers always talk about, where it's like one shot, like this guy's always one flurry away from beating anyone. We saw some of that tonight. He definitely had his moments he hit a wild, like falling back fist on
Tabor, awesome.
And it landed like with shocking accuracy. I don't know if that's luck. I don't know if it's just his how skilled he is. It really did land hard though. You saw Tabor, it was kind of like, oh, like, wow, that really like rattled me. And then he got his defenses up, but that's the kind of excitement Walt Harris brings. So he'll have a longer leash, one, because he's a heavyweight, two, his fights are usually exciting. So yeah, I think he can lose four straight, maybe even five straight. It does depend who it is, who he loses to, because Arlovsky, I think at one point was what, winless in five fights, I believe. And still got another chance. He is Arlovsky, but I mean, he's got a name.
Three
but
straight knockout losses too. I think Arlovsky was losing by a bunch of lackluster decisions, which I don't know if it makes it better or worse.
Almost worse. Yeah, that's right. Almost worse.
I don't know, but I guess losing in exciting fashion is keeps you around longer. I don't know.
I think Andre Arlovsky is one of those guys that will just be like, he'll just answer the phone and be like, yep, I'll fight whoever. So, hey, you know, you
send me the check. I'll show up.
Andre Arlovsky is an expensive fighter.
Yeah, he is a prize fighter.
They keep him. His managers did good on him.
He's raising the average salary. All right, the UFC can point to like, what do you mean? Our average salary is this high because they have guys like Arlovsky.
We were in. I don't know if I told this on this show. When we were in Jacksonville, we would see Andre Arlovsky just bopping around everywhere, and I've never seen a man. Because I don't even know if he had fought yet or if he was coming off his – had he – no, he hadn't won yet. Had he? I don't remember. Because he won his last fight, right, if I remember correctly?
Bozer, right?
Against Chase Sherman.
Oh, Chase Sherman.
So I can't remember if he had fought or not yet. But so he – I have never seen a man smiling so much. And just for whatever reason, Andre Arlovsky just had a smile on his face the entire week. And we saw him everywhere. He wasn't even doing anything. He was just hanging out.
He also, the other thing that keeps Arlovsky relevant is he'll always be former UFC heavyweight champion Andre Arlovsky. That's like, that's something that you can always put on like whatever the advertising or any matchup, you know. I get every time I have to write an Arlovsky fight, I always mention it. I always throw it in and, there, even though it was like a lifetime ago, like a different era. But
he lost to five straight people.
Yes.
At one point, he lost to Stipe, former champ, Overeem, like former multiple champs inside the UFC, Josh Barnett, former champ, Francis Ngannou, current champ, and most importantly, fought to a decision against future champion Marcin Tybura.
Oh, yes. There it
that
is.
That was a good loss. Right.
But at what point do champions, like, do they reach that status where it's like an Academy Award winner who's like won a long time ago? We just don't mention, like, Academy Award winner, Cuba Gooding Jr., in Snow Dogs 4. It's like, at what point are you not allowed to use it?
Never.
Academy Award winner, Kim Basinger. You know what I mean? It's like never. At some point, I got a lot of these guys. The statute of limitations has to run out, I feel like, on these
never.
Awards. But no, of course.
No, man, you can't take awards away. They're there.
Not in the fight game.
Andre Arlovsky lost brain cells to win that. You can keep that forever.
It's true. It's the fight game.
Sharon Stone.
Got a Kim Basinger reference in the show today.
Oh, tremendous.
Yeah, that's marked that on the bingo card. Cool.
Walt Harris is also 37, and I think he provides value to the UFC, not just with his fighting. He's very good as an analyst. I'm glad they gave him a shot in 2020, and I hope he gets more chances to be on the desk this year.
He was really good at it. He was great for that spell of time when he was always the guest fighter in the back. Like they
awesome.
Before the pandemic, he was great back there. He was the guest
He's
fighter
a good
in Boston,
dude.
Right?
Yeah, he was one of them.
But then like a week later, tragedy struck. So that kind of overshadowed that whole video. Yeah.
We didn't talk about this real quick. Focus on the first part of this comment, not the second part. Because
I know Brad Okamoah tweeted that Tom Breeze had suffered panic attacks before. Do we think it's that, or was it a timing issue? Montana De La Rosa versus Ariana Lipsky was bumped to the main card.
Well, that's why it was bumped.
I have no idea.
I mean, was that the story? Yeah. I didn't see it. I didn't see
that. Tom Brees just pulled out for medical reasons, but they didn't say why.
I didn't say why.
It definitely was not a timing issue. I was hoping that a fight would get bumped to the post, that we have a Bellator-esque post slim, before I realized it's all on ESPN Plus, so it doesn't matter. Main card prelim doesn't really matter. But yeah, no, we can't speculate on that. A medical issue could mean a variety of things. Yes, it's certainly worth mentioning that he has withdrawn from previous fights for those reasons. But tonight, again, literally could be anything. He's pretty open about these things. I think if it is related to that, we'll find out by the end of this week. Otherwise, if we don't, it's none of our business. Whatever. Hopefully, he's all right.
Well, and I was looking forward to that fight too. His opponent's business, and that's I don't even know who he's fighting tonight, to be honest.
Ahoyo.
Yeah. I don't know very much about that gentleman, but that freaking sucks for him. Mm. So I hope. Yeah. I mean, we gotta remember
he's in a do or die fight too. If he lost, he was probably cut.
I don't know how this works. I mean,
I'm sure he got paid.
I don't know. Who knows?
I'm sure he got paid for this.
Yeah. I hope so.
It depends on the situation.
Yeah. So. We'll see what happens. I want to get your take on this, gentlemen, because we're officially on the road to UFC 263. And a big part of the broadcast tonight that got a lot of attention was an interview that Michael Bisping did with Israel Adesanya and Marvin Vettori. And Marvin Vettori, God bless him, in his style, he looked like my grandmother's love seat with that outfit he was wearing. I mean, just so colorful. Like, it just matched from top to bottom. The guy just crushed it. The style was way better than the back and forth between those two guys, at least in my mind. It didn't sell me on the fight anymore. And like with those two guys, like I didn't think it, like I think everything Vettori said over the last like year sold the fight enough. Like I didn't need to see that. You know what I mean? That's just me. Sometimes it's fun. This one didn't really work for me. So on a scale of 1 to 10, Casey Lydon, what would you rate that back and forth, that interview between those two gentlemen and Michael Bisping?
1 to 10. I give it a solid 7. Mostly for Izzy's part, because my impression, like there was something in Izzy's eyes, or like you're not like you must you really like, just like he was just almost flustered. I can't believe you're saying these things. Just I remember even, when we talk about this fight later this week, you know, in our preview shows and all that stuff, I'm going to pull some clips I already pulled from our previous Vettori post shows. And after Vettori beat Holland, I was like, man, there is no way he's going to title fight in that performance. But then I was like, I don't know. He talks a lot of crap, so maybe the UFC would do it. I don't know. Timing's everything. And then this reminded me of why he has this title shot, because he just says things. Just like, I won that fight. I was like, no, you didn't, man. Like, yeah, I mean, rewatch it. Like, it wasn't that close a fight. You held Izzy for a little bit. You got beat up, but mostly. And Izzy, we know Izzy is much better than that Izzy that fought a few years back against Vettori. I'm more hyped about it. I enjoyed seeing that mean Izzy, I'm gonna finish it. I don't remember him, Izzy, really coming out and saying stuff like that about other fighters, like, I'm going to finish you. Like, I will hurt you bad, man. You know? So I enjoyed it. And I enjoyed
Brunson.
And, yeah.
The Brunson's the only one. Yeah.
But there was more of a comical thing. Like, whatever, you know, you and your skinny legs and stuff, you know.
He was getting real. If you watch the press conference with – this reminded me –
there was no humor with Izzy to me in this one. It was just like
– no, yeah.
That's what I mean. Like,
the Brunson – maybe it's because it's also his first fight coming off a loss. So maybe it's just a different approach to Izzy. Like, he just wants to F this dude up.
Yeah.
If you watch the on sale ticket press conference with Izzy and Whitaker, but it was in Australia. It was in Melbourne. So like it was like both the New Zealand and Australian crowd was there. And that was the press conference. I don't know if you saw it. They didn't do a lot of hype around it for like UFC.com. It was one of those press conferences for the people there. Robert Whitaker fan brought a megaphone to the press conference so he could yell at Izzy, even though in case he couldn't get to the mic. And it was fantastic. And that Izzy was the Izzy that was talking with Marvin Vettori. Like, he was getting mad. I liked the back and forth though. Cause anytime you get two individuals and it's like Marvin English is clearly not his first language, so he's just saying things that he's heard a lot and we find them funny. And it's like you're yelling, like, I'm not comparing Marvin Vittori to a child, but it's like when a kid only knows like five insults and you come at him with this like perfect like exchange and he just goes, yo, you're dumb, and you're just like, I don't know what to say to that, man. And then you just like respond intelligently. He goes, yeah, well, you're stupid. And it's like, okay, I feel like I'm just yelling at a wall right now. I feel like that's what Izzy was doing. I loved everything about it. It was fun. And like the best part was when Marvin's like, I know I'm gonna tell you what I'm gonna do. I'm gonna take you like, and then I'm just gonna hold you on the canvas. Like he was just laughing about it. He goes, that's what I'm gonna do. And I'm just like, it's not gonna happen. Yeah. But I love how confident you are about it.
Yeah,
I love how confident you are about
it. It's cute. I think it's cute.
You know, and then Izzy's like, and then he's like, Izzy, how are you gonna win? And then he just goes, and then you just hear Marvin go, he doesn't even know. And I'm just like,
you don't even know how you're gonna beat me. How are you gonna beat me if you don't even know?
It's destiny. It's destiny. That's what he kept saying. I'm like, I don't think you know how destiny works, my man. Well, whatever. I'm hyped for the fight.
It did not. I mean, I was hyped for fighting anyway, I guess, because it's an Izzy fight. And because the natural, the very real beef between him and Vittori, which is why I did not particularly enjoy this segment. So I'll be all the way on the other side of it from you guys. Yeah, I did not enjoy the segment. I thought it was not uncomfortable, but I just didn't feel like it sold the fight very well. But it's hard to gauge. So here's what I was thinking while you guys were just talking there was, it's hard to gauge the effectiveness because if you're trying to say, okay, well, would it make someone who's like maybe not a hardcore UFC fan or who's not, who maybe isn't super familiar with either guy for whatever reason, would it make them want to buy the fight, you know, purchase this pay-per-view? But then I realized this, first of all, it was airing on an ESPN Plus show on a card headlined by Jairzinho Rozenstruik and Augusto Sakai. So are those people even watching? It is on YouTube. It is on social media. But again, is this the sort of thing that someone is going to go out of their way? Like I'm talking about the promo specifically to watch it. So it's almost not like it's almost not for bringing in a more casual audience. But that is the way I was looking at it. So maybe unfairly, but I do think it's not something that would really appeal to anyone who wasn't already planning to watch these guys fight. So that's my issue. Maybe from an entertainment standpoint, it was okay. Though it didn't do much for me in that regard either. But from a selling a fight standpoint, I thought it was just like completely ineffective. I thought it just comes off as a little bit awkward. But look, I'm on record as saying I'm not the biggest fan of Israel Adesanya's promos or whatever, his interviews and all that. I think he talks a lot, which is good. I think he has moments of these strong lines, but I've never thought that he's been like a super charismatic guy, not as far as talking. I think he has a charismatic aura, but as far as like actual, like in interviews and doing promo and stuff, I don't think he's that great. I know Ben Duffy from Sure Dog tweeted, Israel Adesanya's trash talk might be the most overrated single skill in MMA. Obviously, some exaggeration there, but I did agree with that tweet though.
Oh, I think Izzy's horrible. I think Izzy's horrible at trash talk. That's why I like this interview, because it wasn't trash talk. This was just Izzy going, I'm just going to, dude, I just do not like you. I'm insulted. I just saw that he was just insulted in his eyes. I can't believe I have to, like, this is the way I have to make my living. I have to make a few million dollars by beating you up. Okay. You know, but, I'm going to enjoy this though. Yeah. You know,
Izzy's not a great trash talker. And I think he's just a goof.
Yeah. He's just a goof. Yeah. He's just a goof. But when it's time to fight, good luck. Good Lord.
He's the most like he's very confident when he talks, and when I hear him talk, I'm like, I don't understand what you're saying right now. But when he fights, he's just as confident, and it's like that's what sells him. He's one of those guys that I don't think he would need to talk, but whatever. Still inside.
I'll never question his overall. Look, I'm on record just saying I still think his entrance for the Robert Whittaker fight, the dance, I still think that's the best entrance ever. I know some people think dancing is I'm a big dance guy. I love dancing. I know some people think it's corny, and it's corny when fighters do it. I thought that was like legitimately, that wasn't like fighter good. That wasn't like, for a fighter, no. that was a good dance. I'm like, I think objectively, that was a really cool dance.
Israel Adesanya is a very good dancer. Like when he went to Nigeria, and they had like the breakdance circle, and then they were like, oh, Izzy, come on in. And I was like, oh, oh, this is going to look bad because he's surrounded by a bunch of professional dancers. And not only did he do well, he like held his own. He was really, really good.
Yeah.
Also, I really love, like, regardless of whether he's like, but he's not a good trash talker, but, and you, I feel like people have told him that and he still does it, which I also appreciate. Cause he's like, whatever, I don't care, I'm still going to do it.
All right. There's
not fake, I'll say.
I think I'm more on the AKA side of the promo, but I did find some things that I did enjoy. First of all, I love the fact that Marvin Vettori is like, I won that first fight. Like, he's just bought in and he's just playing that role and he's surfing the wave. I love it so much. And he should always do that. And even if he loses, a 50-43 decision, he needs to say he won that fight too and just play that role over and over again forever and ever.
We're 1-1.
Yeah.
We're 1-1.
We're 1-1. Let's go. Like, that's what he needs to do. It's just great.
Mike, for the press conference, he should come out of a belt. He just buy a belt UFC.com and just walk out the belt.
Derek Lewis style.
I'm retroactively the champion because I almost won a decision before you won the belt. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I actually have to do a retro robbery review this week of their first fight just because Marvin never shuts up about it. I'm spoiling it, by the way. Spoiler. I think everyone should read it because obviously my reviews are friggin' amazing. But spoiler, no, it wasn't. So sorry. Scroll to the bottom of the article. It wasn't. No. I haven't watched the fight in a while. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'll look back on it. I do not. I mean, from what I recall, it was not a robbery, but we'll see.
But find out why. I think the one thing that really hurt this whole thing was that it was too long. It was just too long. Like, if you want to go back and watch a whole interview, you can go watch it on YouTube. I felt like it was like 7 minutes long. Like, these things are just like one or two questions, like let them go back and forth and then get out. Like, get out, make them want more, make them go see the fight. I think the longer it went, the less like appealing it got. The third thing that really sticks out is the fact that, yeah, it's a fine fight. Izzy's back and all that. But we all know Robert Whittaker's like the guy that should be in this spot. We understand why he's not in the spot, but he should be in the spot. And then the last thing that I thought about, and it made me crack up myself up in this room by myself, Marvin Vettori is like Nick Totoro in the movie The Longest Yard, like the remake. Like, he just, the looks on his faces, like his eyes open wide, and he just starts like randomly shadow boxing for no reason. Like, that's like, he reminds me of Nick Totoro in The Longest Yard. Like, he's just so funny. He's such a character. And it's just great. It's great in like all the wrong ways.
I found like this needed one of the, if it was better produced, if it wasn't like, maybe because of COVID restrictions, I'm not sure why they did it that way, but this needed one of those old school like HBO face off ones. It was just like Max Kellerman at a table and both fighters on each side of the table, and it's just go, you know. And someone basically just couldn't control the conversation because that's not his job. He's just, I don't know, he just doesn't do that well. That it should have been someone like Anik or someone who could control it better. But you know what I'm talking about? Remember those HBO kind of? Yeah. Those were great, you know?
That's kind of a boxing and BBC thing. Like, BBC does that with boxing a lot now. And they did it with, I think it was Sky Sports did it with Till and Masvidal. Mm-hmm. That was the last time I saw it in MMA.
Yeah.
Remember Joe Rogan? I think it was DC and Jones. Like, they all sat in like director's chairs. Like, something like that. You just have them in the middle. Like, it got a little chaotic and Rogan like did his best to control it, but like something like that where it's just like the tone is, and Michael Bisping's just gonna like feed into it anyways. Like, he's just gonna feed right into that fire. That's because he loves it, and he should, because that's who he is. But it's kind of tough throwing him in that spot, so I get it.
I mean, I'm excited for the fight, but if it does feel like a mandatory in boxing, you know what I mean? When guys just have to fight, that's what this fight feels like, a mandatory, because we know Whitaker's the guy, but Izzy's got to do what he's got to do.
It's a good card, man. Yeah,
and that's fine.
The card is great. Yeah,
there's no local fighters. It's the only problem.
Really? They could. There's not one. None,
ish. Kind of.
Trains in Arizona? Wow.
Not really. Not last time I looked. I mean,
Brandon Moreno has a lot of ties to Arizona. He talks all about it in our interview. Lauren Murphy has ties to Arizona.
If you've ever been here, have like South Phoenix is basically Mexico. So
yeah, he has that going for him. Moreno's had a lot of fights. What do you say? Like 6-7 fights? in Arizona?
Well, if you fought in an LFA, you've probably fought in Arizona.
Yeah. How much Henry Cejudo are we going to get this week, you think?
not enough.
I learned Henry Cejudo lives like right down the street from me. Like, he lives really close. And I've driven by his house a few times, and I've been like, that is a very gaudy truck. Oh, that is a ridiculous flag. And then I found out that Henry Cejudo lives there. I was like, that makes a lot of sense.
All right. I got to look at the rest of this card. So we got those two fights. We obviously have Nate Diaz, Leon Edwards, Paul Craig, yep. Jamal Hill, Damian Maya, Bilal Muhammad, Carlos Felipe versus Jake Collier. You know that's going to be fun. That's going to be Jed Meshew's fight of the night. Ferezian versus Luigi Vendramini, Hakeem Duwadu versus Mavzar Evloev. That's a great one.
That's good.
Injected into my body.
Lauren Murphy, Joanne Calderwood, huge fight at 125, probably number one contender fight. Matt Frivola, Frank Camacho, you know that's going to be fun. Drew Dober versus Brad Riddell, that's going to be fun. Steven Peterson is back. He's fighting young Chase Hooper, who will be on What the Heck this week. Eric Anders versus Darren Stewart, that rematch.
Run it back.
And then the AK Lee People's main event, Pani Khanzad versus Alexis Davis, will kick us off.
Canada.
135 pounds.
Dude, the resurgence, Alexis Davis.
Next week is going to be so freaking crazy. PFL, holy, Clarissa Shields debuting. Anthony Pettis is coming back. Brandon Longney.
Kayla Harrison.
She's
is that on next week's card?
No.
Okay. No, I don't think so. That's 2 weeks. So my apologies. Yeah,
another.
This is Pettis.
But Pettis is fighting, and like the PFL card's pretty good. And then you got that Bellator card right after. No. Dougie Limes is fighting.
Yeah. You know what's going to be even Wednesday?
What's Wednesday?
Like two media days.
Ugh. You got a media day. I got a media day.
But listen.
Don't worry about it. No. Don't worry about it. You can live stream Jose's. I will tape mine and then I will send them over. So we don't have to worry about it. We're gonna have different interviews, all different conversations.
The social team that will be clipping up all of these videos, send the social team just like a six pack of beer to get us through.
Dude, you got it.
We'll make it happen. I know we gotta sign off soon, but and I don't know if I'm gonna get a chance to say this. So I don't say this is for you, PFL. This is time for you guys, the PFL. get your scheduling right, because this isn't right. Clay Collard beats Anthony Pettis, definitively beats Anthony Pettis, and then he's the first, and then Anthony Pettis is headlining this show, and Clay Collard is the first prelim. And the same thing with Caitlin Young. Caitlin Young picks up a really good win over Cindy Dandois. Now, Cindy Dandois is headlining that show against Kayla Harrison, the 17th show, I think, against Kayla Harrison. And Caitlin Young is opening up the prelims. So I'm a little biased because I interviewed both fighters. Not that they're great interviews. I really enjoyed it. I was really excited to see them win. And then to see them relegated after their victories, to the first fight on the prelims of their respective. What? Come on, PF. I understand name value. I know Pettis is a bigger name than Clay Collard, but can we have some meritocracy? Could he not at least get on the main card?
No.
This is insane.
Not how life works.
This is punishment for beating Anthony Pettis.
Yeah.
Is Bubba Jenkins on the main card?
Yeah,
he is on the main card. Yes.
Yeah. I'm looking at Tapology, but I don't know if that's correct fight bout
order. I think Clarissa Shields' fight goes into the Bubba Jenkins fight.
Goes into. Okay.
Is Clarissa not the main event?
No, co-main.
You sure?
No, third fight.
Oh, wow.
I don't think she's the main. I spoke to her opponent, Brittany Elkin, and she was under the impression that it was the main, but I checked in with the PFL, and I think they said they couldn't confirm that.
I think Pettis is the main event.
He's the main event of this week's card, for sure. The 10th, believe he is.
And then I think Bubba Jenkins and Bobby Moffitt is the co-main, and I think Claire Shields is the third fight.
Dude, Marcin Held and the Canadian Gangster on the PFL card. That fight rules.
Yeah, dog.
That's been a great fight.
Lance Palmer.
I support the PFL. I call the PFL out of love. I'm like number one PFL advocate guy over here. I think the PFL is really good, and I think more people should watch it. And And look, where else can you go to know how fast someone is punching?
Speed right? strikes.
Every time I watch tonight, I'm like, oh gosh, was that punch 12 miles an hour? Was it 11 miles an hour? I wouldn't have to ask if I was watching the PFL. There'd be a graphic on screen telling me. So UFC, come on, let's get some.
That ground to panel was 11.6 miles an hour. Dang.
What was the PSI on that choke? Like, what was the PSI on it? Should he have tapped? Because I saw a guy in the PFL, there was a PSI of like 50 and he didn't tap. So, oh no, don't play me off.
I will say PFL's broadcast team is phenomenal. Really good.
And Florian, they spent a copious amount of money on their arena or cage or whatever. They have like a screen that goes like 360 degrees around the top. It's like $1 million. Pretty insane.
It's wild. And Sean O'Connell, I think, is the most underrated play-by-play guy in MMA. And he's Utah's a own. Former fighter, which is even crazier.
Well, he had a radio show in Utah for a long time. So that's right. He got reps in. So like people assume he just jumped into it, but he got a lot of reps in before he hopped over to PFL.
Yeah. And it shows. No doubt about it. Well, you know what that music means. It means it's time to go. We covered this event quite a bit, but don't worry. You think the weekend's over? The biggest winners, in my opinion, are Floyd Mayweather and Logan Paul, because they're getting all the attentions on them. Breaking Jarzynski got performance.
Will Floyd Mayweather walk away with his win bonus?
Find out tomorrow on Showtime. Godspeed, everybody. For Casey, Jose, a.k.a. Mike Heck. Pleasant dreams.
Pleasant dreams. Happy birthday, AK.
Love it.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
Apple Card is the perfect cashback rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase, every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/cardcalculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch, subject to credit approval, terms apply.